Hello, everyone. This is Rob Golfy with RE/MAX, the Golfy team. Welcome to the Golfy Real Estate Show, Niagara Edition, with host Tim Dennis. And we have a special guest, Brian Hogman from Mission 35 Mortgages.
So there's Rob, how's it going? Tons of us ready to go this week. Hello, Rob. Hello to Brian as well. Welcome back. So where do we want to start this week on the program? Because, I mean, we've had stories about interest rate increases, increase in buyer activity. I mean, what's going on right now, Rob? What are you noticing on the ground?
So things have picked up quite a bit. We're getting multiple offers, usually on houses between probably $400,000 to $700,000 range. If you price it right. Okay. Now everybody, again, multiple offers on houses priced right. We're noticing an increase of buyer activity. Same thing with Brian.
Yeah, we're noticing that too. Yeah. A lot of the pre-approval people getting off the sidelines right now, jumping back in right now.
Yeah.
So, and I think a lot of that had to do with the interest rates, because everybody predicted a quarter point, saw a quarter point, that met expectations. So people are starting to feel a little bit more certainty about where they're going to land.
And so we're not out of the woods yet, but I do feel, and I always say February, March are the months. So if you're looking at selling, you price your house right, you will sell and otherwise. Now, in November, December, and a little bit into the January, if you're looking at buying, those are the months to buy. That was the months to really negotiate and get good deals. But, but the thing is, things are moving. We're surprised at our numbers, and we still got about three days left into the month. And I think we may even do exactly what we did last year in January or more. So we'll see what happens after this weekend in sales. And you can even see on the appointment center, appointments are coming up now. Like they're starting to increase. And and people are pricing their houses more accurately. I mean, everybody always obviously wants more, and that's our job, is to get them more money. But with the market the way it's turning, and now, especially on Wednesday with the increase.
What happened Wednesday? What was that?
The quarter point. So we got the expert here from Mission 35, Brian, and they increased it a quarter point. Now, Is this it? Is this going to be it, Brian? Like, what's your thoughts on this?
Yeah, you know what? Looking at all the great think tanks and economists, I've been reading it morning, noon, and night. And there's a general consensus that we've hit the pause, we've hit the top, we've hit the peak. And I think, you know, all the way from the aggressive side, we've seen some people end up saying we've gone too far, and we may see cuts at the second to third quarter of 2023. That's the aggressive side, because these things have a lagging effect. And now as those effects are starting to catch up, some people, and this is why you're seeing some fixed rates be a lot lower right now, is because the market's pricing in some cuts. On the other side, you still have some economists saying, you know, depending upon inflation, because this is all dependent upon inflation, where they may say, hey, you know, if the inflation doesn't come down over the next 30, 60 days where you want it to, you might still see another quarter. But I would say the masses are saying flat for 2023. We're at the peak. We're probably going to see the same rates stay stagnant for the rest of the year.
Yeah, I think that is, and it's normal. Like, I mean, it's not an outrageous interest rate compared to what in the past. I mean, we're probably still, like, if you had to average out the year, I mean, we're still low, like, compared, I mean, average last 10 years or 15 years.
Well, you know what? And I think barring all the inflation, everything that we've gone through, we're in a good spot, right? And you think that we started this in March of last year. We're coming up at 12 months going through this almost, right? It started out as a quarter point increase. Then we saw half points. We saw three quarters. We saw one. Then we saw half. Now we've seen a quarter. So it's kind of like we've gone through the whole, you know, system of rate cuts. But this is not 1980. Okay, it is not 1980.
Or 1990 either.
No, and you know what? And for those of you listening out there, I really need to share this with you. I shared it with Rob the other week too, because the major banks are calling right now and really capitalizing on this. And quite frankly, it really pees me off, because I got a phone call, and I'll share this with you guys, and Tim, you'll love this. I got a phone call from the renewal department of a major bank, because I'm not someone that's unaffected by these variable rates too. I've got lots of mortgages. I've got some fixed and some variable. The renewal department calls me and says, hello, Mr. Hogman, you know, rates are going up. What would you like to do?
Oh,
And I said, well, you know, I like to play dumb just because it was around 8:30 at night. I thought I'd have a little fun. I said, well, I don't know, Mrs. Bank. What do you think I should do? And you know what they said? Their script. I just can't believe their script. They said, well, you realize in 1980, rates went up to 20%. I said, this is what you're telling people now? This is what you're telling people? So, you know, don't let the fear of God go into you about these interest rates, because this is not the 80s. It's not the 90s. Rates are not going to 20%. And I'm really, really disappointed in the banks that they're scripting this out for people to call renewals. And then they gave a horrific renewal rate. So, you know, in this time, is it a good time to lock in? It might be. It really might be for some people. Yeah. But do yourself a favor. Get a second opinion.
Well, tell the story. You were telling me that he bought a property in Florida. Now, that was two years ago.
Yeah.
And he goes, I asked him, well, so what's the interest rate? He goes, I locked in at 3.5% for 10 years.
Yeah.
And I go, wow, that's a great deal. And then he says to me, he goes, I didn't feel that was a good deal at the time when he locked in, when people were getting 2%.
I know. Yeah. I know.
See,
you know,
see, Tim, like, time down the road showed that he did the right thing.
Yep.
Locking in.
Yep.
And because he told me this story just about a week ago, I'm thinking, wow, he did well. But you thought you were getting
I thought I was getting the hose.
Yeah.
You know, I got that. And I think it goes to show, and I think we all learn through times like this, right? I know I've learned a lot too. And it's impossible to time the market, whether you're in real estate, whether you're in mortgages. And I see far too often people right now, mortgage brokers and mortgage agents turning into economists, predicting the future. And listen, if you can afford the payments, Canadians' wealth, majority of it is in their home. If you end up getting a home, the average person is paying off anywhere between $600-$700 a month in principal. Mm-hmm. People don't save that in a tax-free savings account.
No,
you don't save that. So
if
you can afford the payments, or if you're in a variable and the rate went up and you want to lock in a point lower and it makes sense and you have some certainty there, by all means. But I will make one more point on this renewal just because I feel like I'm on my soapbox today with the rates. But I'm not hating on the banks here, but I think it's important people to be educated, because if you have a variable rate with a bank and you go to lock it in, there is consensus that rates will probably drop, whether it's going to be 6 months from now, 12 months from now, or 18 months from now. When you lock into a fixed rate right now with a bank, banks have the highest, it's called interest rate differential penalties. They have the highest penalty. I could really geek out and tell you the nuts and bolts of it, but they have the highest penalties to break. Mortgage brokers, there's lenders that we deal with that are called monoline lenders, kind of like the old ING or like places like that. First National's one, MCAP's one. Credit unions are great at this. The reason why I'm saying this is because if you do lock in, you just want to make sure you know what the penalty is on the back end, because it's not uncommon in markets like this where you get a little bit worried, you decide to lock in because it's cheaper. 18 months from now, the rate is significantly cheaper, and now you want to break that rate to take advantage of another lower one.
Right.
If you lock in with a bank, just be prepared. Your penalty could be $15,000, $20,000, $30,000. It could be,
depending on the term that you locked in for.
And the lender that you lock in, because different lenders will have different penalties. So other lenders will have a lower penalty, which will make it a lot easier for you to lock in to a lower rate. You still would have a penalty, but you do it. So again, be educated on this uncertain time.
Well, remember years ago, a lot of people were locking in for the 10-year mortgage, and then people ended up moving 3 years, 4 years, and they were stuck paying penalties of $30,000. I've seen that. People were in tears. The banks really got them, and they were coming out with these 10-year locked-in mortgages. And also, not only they were paying the penalty on that, people had rental furnaces, and they were paying penalty.
Yeah.
There was another issue there. $15,000 to the rental furnace.
They didn't even know it was registered sometimes.
No,
on there.
Exactly. Yeah, $30,000. Yeah. So them selling their house, it would cost them $45,000 between the rental company and the mortgage company, and then they add the real estate fees on top of that. There was hardly any equity left. They had to stay in their house. They couldn't even buy another house. They just had to stay there for a while. So you got to be careful if you sign a long term mortgage.
Yeah.
Like our parents' generation, they moved into a house, they stayed.
True.
That's it. Yeah. Our generation, we're moving pretty well every 5 to 7 years.
Yeah, sometimes like, 3 to 5, I think.
Yeah,
people are moving,
actually,
right?
And that was being very conservative there. But I think
people have a life event typically every 3 to 5 years, whether that's a job change, job loss,
baby,
divorce, like
everything.
All that stuff.
Yeah.
So, and if you're going to end up breaking your mortgage, we always end up saying there's two costs to the mortgage, the cost getting in and the cost getting out.
That's a good
and
one.
A lot of time, yeah, I didn't, I'm going to coin that, yeah. The cost getting out, okay? Just make sure you're not getting a punch in the face on the way out.
No, you got it, you got it. But that's, that's crazy.
Brian,
I'm still buying real estate. Like, I'm not worried about the interest rates.
I have a question for you, Brian. I mean, I'm thinking about this as I drove past your office the other day, and I was thinking, okay, the average person who walks in to talk to you right now, what is the number one question? What's the first thing? What's the most concern that people have when they walk into your place at Mission 35?
That's a great question. I'd say it's two, because we segment our clients basically into buyers and then people who are refinancing, right? So someone who already owns a home and doesn't. And the number one question really comes down to, it's funny, and this is a great question for Rob too, and we hear this question all the time, and they say, is it a good time to buy? Is it a good time to buy?
Yep.
Right? And we always take that question. We always end up saying, like, listen, it comes back to that market timing. And I believe that if you're qualified, it's a good time to buy. And the reason being is because I've been in this business for a while. I know Rob has too. And I've seen far too many times, and we might be entering into another time where this happens, where you get out qualified because of mortgage regulation change. And we've seen it where, you know, we used to have 35 and 40 year amortizations.
Yes.
And then when they reduced that, a lot of people got out qualified.
That's right. That's
we saw the stress test come into play, which is good, right?
Yeah.
But then a lot of people all of a sudden got out qualified. Yeah. Now we have OFC. They're the ones who set all the mortgage governing guidelines. They're tinkering around in things right now. And they've suggested a couple of rules that they may implement in April. So when I end up saying, you know, I always sound like a used car salesman when I'm saying buy now. But the reality is that if new legislation comes into play in April, because if the market is peaked, they're not going to make mortgage rules easier.
No.
Because that would be counterproductive. So if they end up putting in a new rule that says, there's one rule they're talking about, which says they won't be able to make exceptions if you put down 20%. Right now, lenders can make an exception if you put down 20%.
Right.
If that rule comes into play, you may not be qualified anymore. Right.
Wow.
So now, and I tell people all the time when they come into your point, Tim, I would say, listen, I would rather lose 5 to 10% of my real estate investment over the next 6 to 12 months if it happens to go down, which I don't think it will. But I would rather lose 5 to 10% of my real estate investment than not be able to buy 6 months from now.
Good point.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good point.
Very good point. It's funny because, you know, it's on the top of everybody's mind the moment the rate changes. The headline is mortgage rates this and mortgage rates that. And you get a ton of people coming in to renew, right? And in terms of renewal, what are you telling people in terms of term? How long should they renew for? I mean, given that the whole thing is so fluid right now.
Yeah. It's a good point. It is very fluid, I think. And we've pivoted quite a bit with our advice right now. I think, you know, we always start with goals, right? What are your goals? How long are you going to stay in the house for?
Yep.
How much pain are you in, right? If you're in a lot of pain right now, a lot of people don't know, if you're in a variable rate, like the fixed rate is almost 1 to 1.25% cheaper right now. So instantly, if you locked into a fixed rate, you're saving money.
Yeah.
Right. So we were talking about 3, 4, 5 months ago about 1 year terms and 2 year terms. I'm a little bit more cautious on the 1 and 2 year terms now because they are not offering the same discount that they were, right? So you're not getting any discount to go for a 1 to 2 year term. You're getting a bigger one for 5 years. And I equate it to like going to the casino, like, hey, listen, do you like to gamble? Take a variable rate right now because you might. And if you can sleep at night, you might come out ahead, right? But if you don't like to gamble, you appreciate security. You appreciate being able to put your head on the pillow at the end of the night and know, hey, I'm going to be able to make my payments. Take a fixed. And you know what? Just know about, like I said, the penalties, ins and outs, be educated on it. But do that, because to time the market, whether you save a little bit here or there, I think the market timing with interest rates pales in comparison to the wealth you build over time.
Just I wanted to say one thing. Last week, prior to this interest rate hike, I was advocating to everybody get a pre-approval, right? Because you would get the lower interest rate if you get a pre-approval.
Yeah.
Get the pre-approval done before the interest rate hike happened. And if they did, they'd be locked in at a lower interest rate for at least, that's good for 90 days or 120?
Yeah, 90 days. And what else too, I know just quickly here too, what people don't know is you can actually lock in a rate for a renewal. There's a certain way that you can do it. You can approach a mortgage agent, mortgage broker, and say, hey, my mortgage is renewing in 90 days. How can you help me out? And there is a way to help them out.
We have to pause for a sec, and we'll get back to our Golfy Real Estate Show with Rob Golfy there and Brian Hogren from Mission 35 Mortgages. I'm Tim Dennis, back right after this. It's back on the Golfy Real Estate Show. I'm Tim Dennis, but of course, Rob Golfy from Remax Escarpment, the Golfy team, is here. His guest this week, Brian Hogren, is from Mission 35 Mortgages. Real quickly, before we get further into it, Brian, where are you? Where can people find you?
You can find us at mission35.com. You can Google us. Just Google Mission 35 Mortgages and then send us an email. You can find me on Instagram, Facebook, not on TikTok yet. I got it. Rob's looking at me like, why not? You know, but I got to get on there. But yeah, Google mission35.com or send us an email at mission35.com.
Tell them what Mission 35 means.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know what? Mission 35 started when I was a kid. I had a goal to be mortgage free by the time I was 35 years old. So and it was kind of inspired by my dad. My dad was, you know, my biggest fan, kind of helped me out. And he always said stuff like, you know, spend less than what you make.
Yes.
Still good advice today. Yeah, he used to say, like, if you're broke making 30 grand a year, you'll be broke making 300 grand a year. Yeah, so
that's true.
Manage the little stuff before you get the big stuff.
Yeah.
And I basically, you know, worked hard, saved some money. And then by the time I turned 34, I had bought a bunch of investment properties. And then I sold the house that me and Rob both own, not together, but at certain times.
I own this one house. And then by ironically, I was looking at the history of the sale of this one property. And I just wanted to see how prices have gone up over the past 20, 30 years. And I find that Brian here bought the same house I did, 10 years later?
Yeah, 10 years later.
Yeah.
And that was my Mission 35 house. That was when I bought. Yeah. I bought it for, you know, a great deal, sold it for more 10 years later, and it was enough to pay off the mortgage on my house I live in today.
So there you go. There you go. So we both bought the same investment property, both made money on it. We both did very well on it. And
And you know what? Here's the thing, too, on that. It was a 10-year play.
Yeah.
You know, and I think going back to this crazy market and stuff, people tend to think I'm going to make 100, 200, 300,000 in 6 months or a year.
We were in for the long term, not for the 1 year flip.
And getting back to that, you buy for long term.
Yeah. Always buy for long term.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Let's talk about investments and we've had a lot of talk in the news about foreign ownership or, you know, people buying real estate for investment purposes and whatnot. And there was a story this week about the real estate for young Chinese buyers, which isn't turning out to be exactly what they wanted it to be, Rob. What's this all about?
Yeah, so what's happening is, now we're talking about young Chinese buyers buying in China.
Yep.
They're not buying houses. They don't see the value as their parents did. So I don't know what's going on. Like over here it says majority of Chinese people, those born between 1960 and 1980, invested most of their income in real estate market and the stock and houses. But now they're saying they don't think the properties that their parents will leave them will be worth as much as they used to be. So something is going on in China that I'm not sure. The fertility rate is dropping.
Yeah.
Their population also came down pretty close to a million, which is nothing compared to a 1.4 billion country. So obviously, something is happening in that country that they're not seeing real estate as a great investment. Like the Gen Zs or the millennials? The Gen Zs aren't seeing that.
I think it comes down to supply and demand. Like Canada, you know, for whether people like it or don't like it, you know, we have 700,000 people that came to the country over the past 12 months. We have a record number of immigration. That's what fuels our supply or fuels our demand.
Yeah.
Demand. Right? Yeah.
And if China's losing.
Yeah, China, it's a big concern right now. And people aren't having babies as much. Now, China had to eliminate and stop people from having more than one child.
There was a one rule, wasn't it?
Like it was one child. That's it. Now they're allowing them to have more than one child. But now they're not having it.
Well, now they're too busy working.
Yeah.
to pay for it.
Exactly.
Everything, right?
So they kind of shot themselves in the foot by stopping it, and now they want the birth rate to go up, and it's not happening. So, I mean, it's funny how governments, they can change something to help something in the economy, but hurt something else.
Yeah, we always call it the unintended consequences. When we hear that, when they make a change in the financial rule, yeah, or something like that, those unintended like this.
Yeah, absolutely.
That will drive down real estate, because if you already have the supply there and your population's dwindling, then that means everything is worth less because demand's going down.
For sure. And a lot of people are leaving China. So they're seeing that people are leaving. So now the population is starting to decrease. And I think worldwide, they're saying that like we're going to hit our peak soon, and now it's going to start declining, the population. So I don't know the stats or the all the details on that, but I sure love to read up about.
Well, I think that makes that makes a great case for what Canada's doing. For people, for Canada opening up its borders and having a lot of people come into the country, that actually fuels a lot of growth. Right, I know that's kind of hurting us a little bit right now with the growth, but I think over the long term vision, it helps.
Yeah.
Now we come to a story that you and I, Rob, have talked about a couple of times in the last couple of weeks. And Ryan, I'd be interested to get your take on this, given that, you have a stake in this kind of thing, too. There was another story this week, Rob, of a couple whose home was sold without their knowledge. And they're complaining that, it wasn't their fault. It was the system that failed them. Talk to me about another situation where somebody's home was sold without them knowing anything that was going on.
So what happened was, we were talking about this one couple, Stephanie and Derek. They moved overseas, to go to work for about 4 years. So obviously they got a contract with the company. Now they had been renting out their fully furnished Etobicoke home as an income property while abroad. Now, the couple intended to move back when they eventually returned home to Toronto. So, right. And a lot of people do that when they move away. Hold on to your real estate, because as it's going up, you're not out of the market.
Yeah.
Now, after finding out about the mortgage, things went bad to worse. Now, the couple's property management company swung by their house only to have a stranger answer the door and claiming to own the home. So that's pretty crazy. Now, the couple says the fraudsters who impersonated them to sell their house consistently spelled one of their last names wrong through the transaction, which was inconsistent with the fake ID they were using. Now you think, so what they're saying, the bank failed, the real estate board will figure they catch it, or the real estate board fails, the lawyer failed, everybody along the line failed along the way. So now when you have ID, you have a picture ID, you're looking at it, it's laminated, it's a driver's license, you're not thinking anything of it, you photocopy it, hey, that looks like the guy on that ID, right? Yeah. So I mean, there's professional people out there, professional criminals out there know how to make fake ID. So you're assuming that that's the name of the guy, there was pictures on there, so it went through the whole process. Now, it's a lot bigger than you think it is. The couple said they're thankful that they had titles insurance.
Correct.
And I always advocate this. I'm telling you, if you own your house more than 20, 25 years and you don't have titles insurance, you better get it, because fraudsters are out there and they're gonna.
And an easy way to do it, we tell people, if you are free and clear, because it used to be, back in the day, burn the deed, I'm free and clear. Yep. Put a registered line of credit on it. Yeah. So what you do is, even if your house is worth $1 million, put a secured line of credit on it for 50 grand.
Yeah.
Even if you're not going to use it, it just makes it a little bit harder to commit this fraud, right? Because when you put a secured line on, you get your title insurance.
That's right. So you know what I mean? So it also doesn't account the house being sold under the market value too. They were a little upset about it. So it's like,
who was the realtor on that transaction?
Yeah, no kidding. So, if fraudsters are looking to make a quick buck, said Derek, the person that got defrauded, you get what it's sold for, not what it's worth. So the couple are close to resolving the situation with their house, but they say the trauma from the experience won't go away. Can you imagine coming back home? You're putting your key in the door, and it's a different lock, and you knock on the door and there's somebody else answering the door saying, hey, can I help you? It's like,
well, even imagine the trauma for the buyer. Imagine you just bought your first home, and then someone's coming saying, you didn't buy this home. You're like, no, I did buy this home.
So there's a high probability the buyer got titles insurance.
Yeah. And the buyer doesn't know. That's right. A lot of time too.
That's right. So they inconvenienced two families, mm-hmm. and so, but they were saying that Titles Insurance, it's a 200. What do they say was $200 million in fraud that they had in premiums. Over here it says, Ryder works for one of the title insurance operating across the country and says claims like Stephanie and Derek, along mortgage frauds, have cost the industry at least $200 million in the last 2.5 years. Yeah, that is huge.
And you know what's tough about this too? I got a friend of mine that works in the RCMP, and he was doing like the white collar crime unit. Yeah. And the challenge that a lot of the, well, I guess the opportunity for fraudsters and the challenge for law enforcement is a lot of times the banks don't really have a department or a need to pursue the criminal activity. Because if you think about it, the bank makes billions
of dollars. Money. They don't care.
They get their money from the title company.
That's right.
So then if they missed out on any losses, they have write-offs that are bigger than we know. So then who actually has the time and effort and the job description to go after that
person? It's the title companies. They have to do it, but not the banks. They got their money.
I guess what's so confusing to a lot of people, and you know, Rob, you and I talked about this a lot from the real estate broker's perspective last week. But Brian, from a mortgage, you know, when I signed on to my mortgage, I had like 18,000 things I had to sign. How do you get by? And somebody said in the story, how do you somebody borrow $2 million to buy a house with a simple piece of plastic that can easily be forged? I mean, you must ask a few questions of people when they're taking out a mortgage.
I don't think the fraud's more by getting a mortgage. I'm sure there is fraud that way too.
I think it's more so on the title part of it.
Yeah.
Like I think to your point, Tim, like, and I think, you know, hallelujah to the banks. I will give them praise because the amount of systems and processes and electronic AI things that they've got running in the background right now to prevent fraud is unreal. Right. Like it is getting a lot more difficult. Like I've been doing this for a long time and, you know, used to be able to write down on a piece of paper, someone made $100,000. They'd say, OK, and give them a mortgage.
Yeah. That's
you know,
right.
Now it's, you know, letters, employments, T4s, pay stubs, got to match the credit report. Show me the bank statements. And even the bank statements can get automatically transmitted to the lender now and they can identify there's fraud. So to your point, Tim, that part's really hard. It's the perpetration, I think, is really in the title because the buyer is qualified. They do think they're legitimately buying the house. They do legitimately qualify. It's just that and it's funny. It seems like there's not a real onus on the due diligence of that title. That's where the crux of the matter is.
Well, I had one of our agents. He was called and he's selling a piece of property that he inherited from his father. His father passed away. So the agent calls me up and goes, he says, Rob, I want to make sure this is legitimate. I says, well, it's the estate of whatever the person's name is. I says, does he have a letter from the lawyer indicating that he is the trustee or whatever? And I says, get that from him. And, you know, and just do a double take on the driver's license to make sure it is legitimate. And I said, is the name, obviously it's the son. Is it the same last name? You know what I mean? Like that inherited the property. Yeah. And he says, yeah. I says, just get the letter from the lawyer to verify. Cause obviously he would have had a will and stuff like that. So
I think that's good. And I think one thing too, you know, cause identity theft, we see it all the time is up, astronomically. Make sure when you're dealing, like, cause at the mortgage brokerage, like we have a lot of sensitive information, obviously, just like you do, Rob. Make sure, you know, we always end up saying when you're dealing with your bank, your mortgage broker, use a secure portal to deliver that information. If there's an opportunity to put it in some sort of secure way, take advantage of it.
Yeah.
You know, because that, you know, when you send something over email, it's kind of like floating out in the universe.
Yep.
You know, somebody may catch it along the way.
Yeah, someone way smarter than me might be sitting in a coffee shop going, yoink, I'm going to take that.
Yeah. So.
Oh, amen to that. There have been a lot of those stories recently. Listen, we're going to pause for a second. Just a quick reminder, if you hear lots of things that are helping you make decisions about real estate and you want to hear other episodes of the program, you can listen to the show online through Spotify, iTunes, Google Podcast, whatever. Just Search out the Golfy Real Estate Show and you'll find it, and you never miss another episode. We're going to pause for a couple of commercials here for a second, and then we'll get back with Rob and Brian and me on this week's Golfy Real Estate Show right after this. Okay, thank you for your patience. Welcome back to the show. This is the Golfy Real Estate Show, and I'm Tim Dennis. Rob Golfy is here. Brian Hogman is here from Mission 35 Mortgages. We're having a discussion about a lot of the things going on in the business. It was kind of an interesting story because I've always dreamed of this kind of thing happening, buying a house or, you know, going in someplace, and all of a sudden, finding money. We all have heard the stories of lucky people who find cash. Okay, you've just bought a house, you move in, and you find cash. Is it yours, Rob?
You know what? From what I'm reading, it isn't. So, like, okay, there's a few stories here I'm going to tell you. Back in 2017, the buyers of a house in Edmonton discovered a concealed tin containing $500,000 in cash and gold wafers. Wow. Now, the buyers and sellers sued each other. The court awarded the windfall to the estate of the prior owner.
Wow.
Can you believe that?
Wow.
So, I mean, a big mistake here.
Yeah, I was just kidding. I can't believe, I'll tell you.
That they actually told. Yeah. They actually told.
It does restore my faith in humanity a little bit that they said that.
Another story. In June of 1997, a Stratford woman sold the home where she and her late husband had lived for 38 years. The new buyers had the house demolished, and the contractor doing the demolition found silver coins and $130,000 worth of old 50s and $100 bills. Neither the seller nor the buyers knew about the hidden money when they signed the agreement of purchase and sale, but soon after the parties went to court to claim the money, and the judge awarded the woman who sold the house all the loot. So now they must have known about the money for them to sue, I guess. I don't know. Now, like, I guess, and the thing is, I guess if there's knowledge of it, the previous owners go, but obviously these people were probably laughing and going to the public and saying, hey, I found all this money.
Well, I gotta say, my prediction here is there will, because of these precedents that are now set,
nobody's gonna disclose.
We're not gonna read any more of these stories.
No, no. Because and I'll tell you one thing is I guarantee it that no more news stories are coming out.
Yep. Nope. No more are gonna come because, well, yeah, that's a hard one to call. Right? Because would you not say if you sold the house it was mine, it was in the walls?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, it's hard. You know what? I did have a client. We sold his house, and it was one of an old mafia guy's house, and they found a gun in the attic.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Wow.
Serial numbers taken off.
Oh, wow.
And he says it was his contractor. And he goes, and he said to me, he goes, you know what? If I found that gun, nobody would have known. Oh, God. It hit the newspapers. It was in Hamilton.
Wow.
It hit the newspapers. Yeah, and it was. I guess they would call it Johnny Pops' brother. I better not say that. should I delete that?
His name is Golfy. G O L F.
It rhymes with. That's it. It rhymes with. Pops.
Rhymes with stops.
Yeah. That's it. Oh, dear. Anyway,
you know what I love finding in when I've ever done renovations is the old newspapers. You ever do that?
Oh,
and you end up seeing in the walls and you see a newspaper clipping from and you see the sale or something and it's like, this is 10 cents. I always get a kick out of finding that in the old home.
Oh, yeah. There's, you know what? You'd be amazed. And the one thing I got to tell you guys something, and I always do this with especially elderly people that are selling their house. And I'll never forget this. This is one lady. She lived on the water in St. Catharines. And I might have told this story once before, Tim. You might remember. But I always said, take a look in the attic before you move out of this house or even sell this house. And she goes, why? She goes, sometimes you may have put in stuff in the attic or your husband. And now her husband passed away. And I said, just take a look in the attic. Just have your family and everything. So she goes, can you do this for me, please? And I'm like, oh, okay. So I go, okay. So I look for the attic. The attic access was in the garage, right? Mm. So she had a ladder, and anyway, so I went in the garage and opened up the ladder. You're not going to believe it.
You're a good guy, Rob.
There was a box up there. She had no clue of jewelry, money, all personal stuff. She did not know about it. Either she'd forgotten. Her husband passed away. Must have put it up there just to keep it in a safe place. So if they ever got robbed, they wouldn't catch that. And she was so thankful. And for sure, I got the listing on that. But she was very thankful and couldn't believe it. And I always give this advice. I'm telling you, people out there, if you have parents and you're selling their house, it's an estate sale, look in the attic. Don't just assume. Go in the attic, because elderly people, that generation, they like hiding things. And just go in there and look. And also look in the rafters in the basement. Yeah. Sometimes there's this little hidden area above the ductwork and stuff. So just
where they hide the magazines, Rob.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, that's right. It's true. I just went through a house and I saw a whole bunch of magazines that the daughter found of the father. But also always look in hidden spots, because that generation, they have a tendency of hiding money, hiding jewelry, hiding a lot of expensive stuff.
So, all right. I want to ask you a story. This happened to me many years ago. I sold a house and I left, and I got the movers. I was moving out of town. The movers came in, took the stuff out. I had already gone to the new city because I'd started my job. So my movers were there. Most everything was packed. When all the stuff arrived at my new house, after about a week, I realized I was missing something. And they had apparently missed a room in the basement. And it had my record collection and a bunch of other things, and it completely missed it, and it left behind. So this is about a month after the move, and I contacted the people who bought the house, and they said, we thought you left it on purpose, and we sold all that to a flea market or whatever. We sold your record collection and everything. You ever run into that? Who's responsible in a situation like
that? I know.
That,
you know what? That's a tough one. You know what? I've never heard that from...
I wonder if there'd be a period of time.
That's what I wondered, too.
Well, the one thing is, the people that bought the house from you should have called and said, hey, listen, if it's all boxed up and everything, they should have did their due diligence and say, hey, I think you forgot a room or forgot some stuff here. I think it was their own, I think them trying to benefit from your mistake. There's no doubt about it.
Because there's reasonable stuff where you'd throw out. Like if it's an old something that's not boxed up in a basement, but if it's
especially Beatles collection that you had there, Tim, probably worth about
the original vinyl, the original vinyl stuff.
Yeah,
it's funny. You must run into this once in a while where people leave stuff behind intentionally. The washing machine doesn't work. We're just leaving it there, and you know what happens in that situation.
So you know what? A lot of times, sometimes we do get clients. Or buyers, let's say our client bought a house and the previous owners, they leave garbage or anything like that. I'll do my call to the agent, but I know it's not going to go anywhere. So what I do is then I call just like a garbage company, Just Junk or something. I take care of it myself. We have a fund that we use, fixing stoves, refrigerators. We got a list of handy people, appliance repair people, junk people, like anything that could go wrong with closing date, we want to take care of the client. And because we know people leave stuff behind, we know people leave broken stuff, and that's part of our service that we do as the Golfy team, to make sure that our clients, when they move in, that they're not going out chasing somebody. We'll chase them, but we'll get it fixed ourselves and we'll pay for it and everything. I had a lady that she had major plumbing issues. It cost me $1,000. We paid for it. We took care of it. So, and I know a lot of realtors won't do that, but they were super thrilled. And but then this lady wanted everything else fixed in the house.
My grass is getting a little long now, Rob.
So anyway,
need some insulation.
So we had to put a stop on that. But she was very happy, and she appreciated the plumbing. There were some major plumbing issues in this house, so I had a plumber go there. We took care of the bill, and she didn't have to worry about
That's
it.
That's awesome.
All right, here we get to the part of the program where, you know, advice from somebody with Rob's experience comes in really handy. And we've talked a little bit about this before, Rob, is when you're moving into a new neighborhood and whatnot, you know, scout the neighborhood out, scope what's good, what's close, etc. But how do you scope whether or not you end up with good or bad neighbors, Rob?
It's tough. The one thing is looking for, you know, neighbors. Basically, you can see what's going on the outside. So now, first you look at, you know, presence. If they take care of their house, okay, that's one thing. They take care of their house, and if they're managing the lawns, and they don't have beat up old trucks from 20 years ago that is rotting away with flat tires in the driveway, that's an indication. But the other thing is, how do you know the neighbor is not like psycho? Is that the right word to use? I don't know what other word to use.
Yeah.
Like somebody that is just gonna cause problems.
Right.
I would check to see, you know, on either side what's going on. Try to find out down the street.
Google the address, maybe.
Google the address. Sometimes maybe the house is beside the house that are up for sale all the time because there is a bad neighbor that's causing people to move. Yeah. I'd knock on doors, cross the street, knock on you know, not immediate door next door, but like further down, because I'll tell you one thing, neighbors know everything that's going on. Yeah. And the older the neighbor is, the more they know because they're home all day. So, yeah. and most of those people, they live and hang out in their living room in the front window. So they know who's coming
they
and
see
going.
What's going on.
It's like Gladys. From Bewitched. No, it's not Bewitched. It's Gladys. Is that right?
Yeah, that was from Bewitched. Yeah, Gladys Kravitz.
Brian is a lot younger than I am. He goes, what are you talking about, Bewitched? And so anyway, but she knew everything that was going on, Gladys. And those neighbors are good to have because they're like your watchdog of the street. But the one thing is, how do you know if you have a crazy neighbor next door? You don't know, but you better knock on doors. And the other thing is, look at obviously the property upkeep, you know, if the house foreclosure, like if the house is under foreclosure, is this a bad neighborhood? Is there people keeping up their house? Is a street full of drugs? There's one neighborhood I know, bad for crack.
Yeah.
And people would move in and move out. Move in and move out. And the only people that were buying these houses were people from out of town using out of town agents.
Well, I think it's a good opportunity to, I remember when I bought Tuckett Street, when I bought the other ones as well too. And especially your single guy, single girl or young family, I would drive there before I bought it or conditional at around 10 o'clock at night and just walk around the block, you know, just see what the vibe was like in the neighborhood.
Well, I've been to Brian's house for a party there, and I probably would drive by Brian's house at, 10 o'clock on weekend nights. And I would say, you know, I don't know if I want to live next door to this guy because he's got music blaring.
We've changed, Rob. We've changed.
Okay. Yeah. So, but anyway.
Grow up eventually, guys.
Yeah,
eventually.
Yeah. And then what about like a biker gang, you know what? I'll tell you, people that live close to biker gangs, clubhouses, they love it.
They're very well. I actually had a friend whose grandma lived next to a famous biker house on the street in Hamilton.
Yeah.
And they cut her grass. They took great care of her, actually.
Yeah. No, like all the people that I know that live near biker gang clubhouses, they love it.
So are we endorsing this now?
I was just going to say, the two of There's you are sitting here sucking up to biker gangs, so you must... There must be some issues going on here we're not familiar with. Rob, before we wrap up today, just a quick chat again about people with questions about how much their house might be worth in this market. Tell me a little bit about the calculator you've got that can give people a thumbnail sketch of how much their house might be worth.
Yeah, so we have a website. It's called GolfyHomeValue.com. GolfyHomeValue.com. It gives you a rough estimate, and I think the estimate is getting a little bit more accurate because now prices have been moderately close in the last 6 to 8 months versus in the high market in 2021 and part of the beginning of 2022. But if you really want to find out, Just a rough estimate, you know, just to get a general idea, go to golfyhomevalue.com or give us a call. I mean, it's no obligation. We're no high pressure people. We want to earn your business, and we appreciate you giving us the opportunity to present ourselves, because and I'm going to tell you, like, we may not be the guy that, if you call three agents, if you're looking for the highest agent, give you the highest number. We're going to give you the right and real number, not the highest number. And maybe it is a high number, but if it is, worth the high number. So just, you know, don't hesitate to give us a call, and you won't be disappointed.
Rob, thank you, my friend. Rob Golfy from Remax, the Golfy team. Brian Hogman is from Mission 35 Mortgages. I'm Tim Dennis. We'll do this all again next week on the Golfy Real Estate Show. See you next week, guys.